Hey, this is Kamal Vidal, and you're listening to the Devi Devotion.
Welcome in to the Devi Devotional Podcast, a show devoted to all things Devi and C2C. Hosted by John Arrington and Aaron Wilcox, this dynamic duo brings you actionable strategies with player-driven analysis for your Devi and C2C leagues. Let's dive in.
Let's dive into spring reactions. Welcome into the Devi Devotional, where we stay devoted to Devi. I'm your host, Dynasty Coach A, joined as always by Aaron Wilcox at AaronWilcox86 on Twitter. And tonight we're going to be talking about some spring reactions, seeing, you know, what's going on around the league. We're trying to get as many updates as we possibly can. It's a little difficult. I don't know if it's just this year or if it's every year, but I noticed I was looking up LSU because I haven't really gotten a lot of info from them just yet. They're in their second practice of the spring. And then I looked at, I believe it was Auburn, was in their 13th practice of the spring. So I don't know what the disconnect is there. I don't know what's going on. It's just a really weird occurrence, I guess. But I think there was like an early spring break this year for a lot of things. Maybe that kind of screwed it up. But we are starting to, you know, get some news trickling in. Unfortunately, some of it's bad. Some of it's injury related and everything. But we are starting to get some news in that. And that's great for us to be able to figure out as Aaron's already in a supplemental draft as we speak. Going on. So if you have early ones, obviously you want to know what's going on, you know, for Devi purposes, for trades and whatnot. So definitely important to keep an eye on what is happening. But first, let's check with Aaron. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
Hey, I'm good. And yes, it has been fun to dive into a C2C supplemental draft already. I know not everyone is a fan of drafting early, but I think it adds another, it's another thing to look forward to early in the off season. And it's just a lot of fun. There are some edges to be had for sure this time of the year.
Yeah, it's just like anything else, you know, it can be beneficial if you do your homework. It can also hurt, you know, if a guy gets hurt in spring practice or loses his job or whatever it might be. So there's definitely pros and cons to all of it, but enough about that. Why don't we dive right into the news, and we'll start with some of the worst news. I don't know how big of a deal it's going to end up being for Trevor Etienne, but unfortunately he did have a DUI, DWI, whatever you want to call it. And, it seems like Georgia kind of has a one game suspension kind of in play for that kind of thing. So, you know, maybe he misses one game, maybe he misses a little bit of time. But beyond that, you know, beyond anything, any kind of like actual legal repercussions and like things like that, are we expecting too much out of that?
I'm honestly not expecting much. It didn't sound like Kirby was really that condemning of it, which is surprising considering all the issues that Georgia has had with that type of infraction lately. So, it looks like Etienne is going to get let off the hook here, even though there were multiple charges, you know, the DUI, reckless driving, you know, something about maintaining the lane, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I don't think a lot is going to come of it. I'm not going to react very much. I think it's kind of silly to move him significantly in your Devi or C2C ranks right now, just based on that, unless we hear differently. So I would, I guess, not move him in your ranks currently.
No, and I think really good things are to come for ETN. I'm pretty excited about him this year, what he can do at Georgia. Obviously, this is not what we wanted to happen, but unfortunately, even though it is a big deal and it's not something I want to make light of, it's kind of not that big of a deal for Devi purposes, for C2C purposes. And so, I think when it's all said and done, he's probably going to get a slap on the wrist and, you know, then everything's going to be fine as far as playing, unless he just keeps making stupid decisions. Hopefully this will help him not make any more, and maybe they'll actually hire some kind of Uber, like professional driver or something like that at Georgia, because they clearly need it.
Yeah, and maybe the slightest positive for some of those guys who could get extra reps here in the spring and or just heading into the fall. Let's say he sits out or is suspended, whatever, for that one game. Like, okay, Roderick Robinson, we might get to see a little bit more, I guess, usage out of him initially in the season, and maybe somebody else who hasn't really stepped up thus far. You know, Andrew Paul's getting healthy. I don't know if he's going to remain on the roster or try to transfer out with how much talent is there, but, and it, you know, there's some talent coming in there amongst the freshmen. So it'll be interesting to see if that does allow some other guys to at least get on the field a little bit more this season, but it'll be pretty negligible at the end of the day, I think.
Yeah, actually, it's a good point. Like, I like Roderick Robinson. I like Trevor Etienne more, but I do actually like Robinson. He looked pretty damn good last year in a smallish sample. But, you know, like, maybe he gives him a leg up on at least being in a timeshare, more of a timeshare than he would have been or something like that. And, I mean, honestly, it might not be a terrible thing. Etienne's always kind of been in a timeshare anyway at Florida. You know, that's what he's used to. That's kind of what Georgia's been doing for years now anyway. So, I mean, I think I always expected it to be somewhat of a timeshare. I'm sure you probably did too. So I don't think it's all that crazy to think, you know, that both of them would be on the field at some point. But, you know, maybe it just gives Roderick that leg up to where the coaches really get impressed with them, and maybe he sees a little more time because of it. But we have just a little bit of news out of Auburn. I noticed while I was looking, of course, for any Hank Brown news that I could find, and I found out that Cam Coleman, unfortunately, did come up a little gimpy after a play. It was actually a pass by Hank Brown. It was a touchdown to Cam Coleman, and he came up gimpy, and like, there wasn't any like major news or anything like that. We have no idea, of course, in the way that they report injuries in college is frustrating to say the least, but it doesn't seem major at this point, but it's just something to keep an eye on, especially with the true freshmen. You know, like, anything like that, they can hinder their spring, hinder their going into the fall practices and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's something we do have to worry about. Hopefully it's nothing, but you know, we just wanted to keep you guys abreast of what's going on with that. And then honestly, I am a little disappointed to say that Peyton Thorne is still considered the starting quarterback going into fall practices. Because like I said, Auburn is on their 13th of, what, 15 or 16 practices. So, like, they're pretty close to being done. And the coach said that, you know, that Peyton Thorne does have the leg up on being the starter going into fall practices. However, he did say that Hank Brown, and I cannot remember the other one, Holton something, that they had closed the gap between Thorne and like the starting position and not. So it just seems like it's one of those things where like the coach is going to go with the guy that has the experience, the older guy, the more experienced person. But it sounds like he's saying, hey, this job's still open though.
Yeah, it's definitely open for Walker White here to take the job. No,
actually, in the same article, it did say that Walker White has not looked ready at all. And it wasn't like putting him down or anything like that. It was just saying like he's a literal true freshman, and, you know, like, and has very little experience and everything. And he's kind of looking like he just doesn't know what to do yet. So it's not saying it was impossible for him to ever do anything, but it was saying like he is not even close to being the starter right now.
Yeah, I don't truthfully think he gets that starting job at least anytime soon. I guess, yeah, it was Holden Gariner, I want to say. That's how you pronounce his name. I remember him a little bit coming out, but at this point, he's not really on my radar. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see who wins that job. And at the end of the day, I mean, I'm okay. I guess you think that Hank Brown's pretty talented. We know that Peyton Thorne is pretty average at this point. So, I mean, I don't know if he's going to have a very long leash, but I mean, at least he's an okay-ish passer where he can hopefully get some of these freshmen fed. So I hope everything is okay with Cam Coleman there. Otherwise, get those Perry Thompson shares ready. He could be the next freshman up there. Who knows?
Yeah, our buddy Levi, maybe he saw it coming, or maybe he was the one that, you know, did a little Nancy Kerrigan action or Tonya Harding action to Cam Coleman, took him out after he took Perry Thompson in that supplemental draft of yours.
What a savage.
I know. Just anything to make his team better, man. diving into a little more exciting room, although I don't know how much more exciting, because unfortunately for Alabama, Jalen Hale does have a major injury, it seems like. And it while we, of course, never will have like actual news, it seems like it's an ACL tear. And that's very unfortunate. I would assume that he's going to miss the majority, if not all of the year, if that is the case. Once again, that's not a guarantee. That's not 100%, but that's what I've heard from other people. And I mean, regardless, they're calling it a major injury. He was in the hospital. Like it wasn't some little coming up gimpy like Cam Coleman. And unfortunately, like that was a potential breakout candidate for us. So like, this is really a big deal, because while I'm not overly excited about Jalen Milroe as a passer or anything like that, I feel like he is okay enough to where if somebody was going to take a step forward, I would have kind of expected it to be Jalen Hale. Well, maybe now it has to be somebody else. And that's where we have to figure out, okay, who is it going to be? So I'll ask you, I actually talked about this last night on the last Full Tilt Debbie show ever, about Alabama. Yeah, a little sad, but it's all good. We got good news coming up tomorrow, actually. But yeah, so we were talking about it last night and, you know, going through these players. So I'll let you start off and then I can kind of, let you know how I came up, the answer I came up with, if my brain was working.
Well, at the end of the day, it is a bummer, but it's going to allow a pretty deep room. We don't know truthfully how talented the guys are there right now. I guess, I mean, for sure, like Ryan Williams, he's a stud. I don't believe he's on campus yet. So, I mean, he's really young, right? He reclassified. He should be finishing out his junior year of high school right now. The guy, he still has a lot of work to do to fill out that frame. And there's guys who can step up there in the meantime. And don't get me wrong, I think Ryan Williams, he's the future there. But there can be room for more than one relevant Bama wide receiver. And, you know, the experienced guys like Kobe Prentice, Kendrick Law, I can't even say that Jeremy Bernard is that experienced. Like he has a couple of years underneath his belt, but he hasn't had extensive playing time. He hasn't really proven much to this point. So there are some guys who've been there for a little while, and I guess I'm just not that impressed with them. I think Kobe Prentice could be a nice like role player at the next level. I liked him coming out. He didn't prove to be quite as dynamic as I thought he would be yet in college. I mean, he looked a little bit better last year, I'm not going to lie. But again, is he going to stand? Like when you compare him to Ryan Williams, Kobe Prentice is just not going to look very good. But there's a chance he could get some solid volume again this year. Jalen Hill going out, that's a bummer, but it will allow some opportunities for these young guys. I actually like both Bubba Hampton. Aaron Hampton is technically his name, but I think he goes by Bubba. And he's making a big impact as an early spring enrollee, a very dynamic high school player, over 20 yards per reception for his career, very explosive playmaker who plays on both sides of the ball too. And then Caleb Odom, who actually has switched from being like a borderline five-star tight end to a wide receiver, just because he was never really a tight end. He was like one of those, since he's 6'5", like Caleb Odom was always kind of just this, like, could he be a Kyle Pitts? Could he just bulk up and be basically a wide receiver out there? But Bama is going to try him at the wide receiver position. And with what we've seen Kalen DeBoer do in recent years, like even with guys like Roma Dunze, who isn't that big, but like he can make it work with many body types, many different types of players, finesse players or bigger ones. And Caleb Odom, honestly, his highlights are some of the most exciting by far amongst any of the tight ends in this class. I don't know how he stacks up when we compare him to like the top end wide receivers, but he's a very talented player too. And then the last guy that people probably are wondering about in supplementals is Amari Jefferson, but he's not even there yet. Like he's a baseball stud. He's still playing in his high school baseball season. He's not going to get that leg up. I am not holding out much faith for him at this point to earn meaningful snaps, because I just talked a bunch about a bunch of dudes there. I just don't know how he gets involved over Ryan Williams, over some of these other freshmen and some of the established guys there already. But I don't know, are any of these guys particularly standing out to you, John, besides the obvious and Ryan Williams?
Yeah, honestly, I was kind of, you already touched on, like, I was kind of surprised by Kobe Prentice's year last year, because we both kind of fell out of love with him. Not that we were ever truly in love with him, but his freshman season, just the way he was being used, and he didn't really show, like, big playability. He was getting a lot of targets. He was getting a decent amount of receptions, but it was a lot of small, you know, like screens and stuff like that, and quick slants and whatever. Nothing really like explosive, nothing really like, you know, showing anything that I'd be truly excited about. And so I kind of just wrote him off. And then, and I'm looking at it last night, and I mean, I'm like, look, I'm not a Jeremy Bernard fan. I'm just not. I'm not saying that he couldn't possibly be anything, especially with Jalen Hale being out and like that kind of thing. But he just hasn't done anything to make me think that, like, I'm overly excited about him. I don't think that he's going to all of a sudden have this breakout year and just be amazing. And so I'm looking at, like, who could it be if it's not Ryan Williams? Because, unfortunately, as much as I like Ryan Williams, as much as I expect him to be great, he is a true freshman who also reclassified and, you know, is younger than even what we would, you know, a normal true freshman. So I'm a little concerned that it, you know, it might be too big for him in year one, you know, for him to be the guy. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I'm just saying maybe the odds are against him, you know, at least. And so I'm trying to figure out who could it possibly be. And honestly, I'm kind of thinking it might be Kobe Prentice. I'm not saying that he is all of a sudden going to be this huge stud. I mean, he was the wide receiver 4 on the team last year as far as production, but they lost, you know, they lost those 3 receivers that went ahead, were going ahead of him, and Isaiah Bond, Amari Nyblack, and Jermaine Burton. Burton's off to the NFL, and then the other 2 guys went to Texas. And so he was the 4th best wide receiver on the team last year. And he did show a little more big playability. He was 17.4 yards per reception, 3.41 PPR points per touch. And, you know, and that's with Jalen Milroe throwing him the ball. So while it was kind of a smallish sample, I think he only had like 18 receptions or something like that. So, I mean, it wasn't a lot, but at least he was showing a little more athleticism. Maybe something changed. Maybe he started working out more. I don't know what he's doing, but you know, it seemed like it was a different, at least at the very least, he was being used differently last year than he was being used his freshman season.
Yeah, that's fair for sure. And I will say, actually, at one point I was pretty high on him just as a recruit. So when I was doing the recruit rankings, he was like top 10-ish guy for me in the class, where that was, for a lot of people, that was bold. Most people didn't think he would actually end up rising up the Alabama depth chart. But like you said, we kind of fell out of love just based on not really convincing evidence that he was this explosive player at the college level. But I mean, going back to like his high school speed, I mean, like, he was a verified 4.3 guy in the 40 yard dash and a 10.8 guy in the 100 yard dash in high school. So I mean, he has some suddenness and explosiveness to his game, and he had the second highest production profile in high school out of the entire class. So I mean, Kobe Prentice, I mean, you could understand why I was liking him coming out. However, he's kind of that smaller, slender guy too. So you have to understand he has his limitations when it's projecting to the NFL level. He's not a Zachariah Branch, or even better, a Ryan Williams in his athleticism. He has to win with some of the other finesse and things like that, but he's no slouch either. So I think there's good potential there. And I'm glad that we hyped up Kobe Prentice a little bit, because it sounds like he's for sure running with the starters again, and another year with Jalen Milroe there. Hopefully they can continue to build that chemistry for whatever the upside in that Alabama room can ultimately be. Hint, it's probably not that high as far as a passing offense with Jalen Milroe there, but I mean, who knows? He could definitely take a little step forward here too.
I mean, what did Burton have last year? Like maybe 800 yards, something like that. I mean, if he could be around there, we could at least say, hey, you know, he's on Debbie radars at that point, where he might not even, I'm sure he's on Devy teams, because he, like you said, he was probably hyped, maybe not as hyped as maybe you were as a recruit, but he was probably, you know, somewhat hyped. And so I'm sure he's on Devy teams, unless people cut him last year. You know, and obviously he's on C2C rosters. We know that, but I mean, do you at least agree with me that you would rather, if you had to pick one, you would rather have Prentice over Bernard?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And those guys have been kind of fluid in my ranks too. Like I've probably overreacted on Kobe Prentice. He's definitely moving back up as far as the pecking order there. I actually do prefer Caleb Odom in leagues. I just, for whatever reason, I'm so enamored with his profile. And at the end of the day, I want him to be a tight end. I don't know if it'll happen. A 6'5" wide receiver. I mean, yeah. It's not like they're unheard of, but it's kind of a tough road. But honestly, they're saying that he has, at 6'5", they said that he has the best route running amongst anybody on the team, or at least tied with Bubba Hampton with that. And maybe that's not saying a lot because, you know, Ryan Williams isn't on the roster yet, but with a 6'5" wide receiver like Caleb Odom, with the very impressive production that he had in high school, it's just eye-opening for me. So I unfortunately did not snag him in my supplemental draft. He went, let me check really quick here, but I wanted him. He went in the 5th round, in a, you know, not very depleted draft. So I think that's a fair range for him. I was hoping that he'd fall to me, but again, I guess, you know, the tight end hit rates, if you're just looking at them from a pure analytical lens, just an average, you know, high end 4-star, maybe low end 5-star, it's not great from what the research you've done thus far shows. But he's kind of a wide receiver at this point. He's just a different beast with the wide receiver, or at least the receiving prowess that Caleb Odom possesses.
Yeah, I remember he stood out in Freshbeth, you know, but I ended up taking the tight ends out because I don't even care about him. Like you said, you know, it's an 8.4% hit rate, and that's the high end prospects. The high end, I'm not putting 3-stars and 2-star prospects into this model. I'm putting the high end, you know, 5-star, 4-star guys, and they're hitting at an 8.4% hit rate. Like I'm good. But, you know, now he switched to wide receiver. You know, it kind of reminds me of a Deuce Robinson from last year, where like he's technically still listed as a tight end, I think, on like Fantrax and stuff. But, you know, as far as I know, USC is actually listed him and is using him as a wide receiver and not a tight end. So, you know, it kind of the same thing where it's like, you know, the services are like, oh, no, you're a tight end. And he's like, nope, I'm a wide receiver. and the team's saying, nope, he's a wide receiver. And maybe they need him to be because, you know, they have a lot of these like smaller, shiftier guys. They don't really have too many of the big guys.
That's a good point. If Jalen Hale's out for, you know, in the long term, who else is going to play on the outside in the future? Certainly slot in Caleb Odom as that option. So, and he can win on the outside. Let me tell you, if you watch his film from high school, you'll be very impressed for sure by ball skills and tracking the ball down the field and even run after the catch. So certainly some intrigue there.
And that's another reason why I don't want to sound concerned about Ryan Williams, but it's just kind of another hurdle that he has to leap over, you know, like that he's not the big X receiver, you know, like he's going to be utilized for his speed and more of that Zachariah Branch role, like that kind of thing. And not to say that it can't work or won't work, but it's not the team's number one option, like that kind of thing. That, you know, like I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if the team can really bank on him right now, you know?
Yeah. I think if you're investing in Ryan Williams, expecting like that week one dominance on your C2C roster, for example, that should not be your expectation. But in long-term situations in Devy C2C, you really want to, of course, invest and have a little patience with Ryan Williams, because sooner or later it should click with just how talented he is, for sure. But he's like, what, 16, 17 years old right now? Like, I probably 17, but it's just ridiculous.
Well, that's what I said. I don't want it to sound like I'm concerned about Ryan Williams or I don't like him, because that's not the case at all. But like you said, day one, I probably am. I would say I'm a little concerned for that. Day 366, you know, probably not nearly as much. But moving over to another A team, you know, very exciting one, Arkansas. Now, so exciting. But we actually do have a couple names that are, you know, a little exciting here. Luke Hosh, who I believe he broke his ankle. Is that right? He hurt something. I don't remember what it, maybe Aaron remembers. But he had a major injury last year. He is back. He is practicing. He practiced at least a couple days ago, from what I read. So he's back. He's looking healthy. And, you know, all things are on track for him to be ready for the fall, be good to go, all that kind of stuff. I will say, though, as much as I love Lukasz, and I do, I have him extremely high. We talk about, you know, tight end recruits, but once they have actually shown me something, it's a completely different story. And Lukasz has shown us something. Now, unfortunately, it was a small-ish sample because he got injured, but I think he flashed enough to where I can say, like, I'm very excited about Lukasz. That being said, I also like Varquez Gums, and you know, like I was pretty excited about him last year. He's actually getting some spring hype. And so, you know, like everything that I've read about it is basically saying, yeah, obviously Lukasz is the man. We're glad that he's back. He, you know, he's healthy, all that kind of stuff, but don't sleep on Varquez Gums. He's earned his role this year. He barely played last year after transferring in. But you know, who knows why I believe, I'm trying to remember where he came from, but I mean, he was a uber producer at a lower level, you know, obviously having to move up and everything going to Arkansas, but now he's showing that he deserves to be there. So just a name that I wouldn't forget about, you know, keep on your radars. Not saying he's going to beat out Lukasz or anything like that by any means, but, you know, maybe they can have a two tight end set or, you know, both see the field.
I do think it's reasonable for both of them to see the field. But I will say that Hosh to me just seems like the superior talent, and it was a broken clavicle last season too. So, I mean, when it's like a collarbone issue and he's back to full health, that's great to see. I'm not concerned about that long-term. So just awesome. I mean, he's a top 10 Devy tight end. I don't know where people have him slotted in. I've seen him as high as one. I have seen that. And then I've seen him as low as maybe double digits, but he should be top 10 in my opinion. And yeah, so I guess that's great to see that he's back. We'll see what that production actually is. But think about how long a lot of these tight ends take to mature in college. He did it right away. That's definitely impressive. So he has time to put on some more mass to really put out some production here. If it's not necessarily this year is a big breakout, it could be the year after. Certainly. And then another guy we should bring up is Rocket Sanders. He, unfortunately, he's out for the spring. He is still working back from a shoulder labrum repair surgery.
That he's was also not on the team.
Oh, really?
He's on South Carolina now, remember?
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
I honestly didn't even notice it. Until you just started talking about it. I'm like, wait, why are we talking about Rocket Sanders? He's not even on Arkansas.
We're going to go over to South Carolina here, huh?
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Rocket Sanders, my bad. I mean, when a guy like that transfers in after having such an abysmal season and having the injuries and all those other things too, and the weight gain, right? He ballooned up to the 240s weight wise and just did not look like the same guy. And then he's for this new team, South Carolina, he's not even practicing yet. And there's other guys coming in there to compete with him. I don't know. I guess I'm not concerned that much about the competition there. I'm more concerned about the player himself. At this point, Rocket Sanders just does not seem like I had some hope to like buy him low this offseason. It doesn't look like I really want to do that at this point. So my confidence in him is going down. He can get there. He can get back healthy for sure. I understand that those types of surgeries, I've rehabbed those with patients before, and it takes a while. It really does to get that full strength back and to be actually loading up with heavy weight. So it looks like he's lost weight, but I am afraid that it could be some muscle mass too that he's lost. I mean, you think about so many limitations for the upper body strength and even some a little bit with the lower body when you're rehabbing something like that. So anyways, I have slight concerns with Rocket Sanders here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you said, we're happy that he's back down to a better weight, a realistic weight, whatever you want to call it. But, I mean, the fact that he can't even practice with his new team, you know, is very concerning to me. I already had my question marks about what is he going to get back to the player he was, like that kind of thing. And it's just tough with him being out for the spring. That being said, like you already touched on, there's not too much competition that we're going to be overly concerned about. So he's probably going to win the job. He's probably going to be just fine when it's all said and done, assuming he can get back to health. But man, we need to see this guy healthy, in shape, like all that kind of stuff. I guess the good news is, you know, being that it is a shoulder, that, you know, he should be able to be in shape. Like you said, he's losing some muscle mass. Hopefully, like, upper body muscle mass probably isn't as big of a deal, you know? So like, as long as he's working out his lower body and doing all that kind of good stuff, then it probably won't be as big of a deal. Obviously we know, you know, having strength and being able to, you know, break tackles and do all that kind of stuff is important as well. But, yeah, I'm not too concerned about it, but man, if he's still out in the fall or struggling to get on the field or whatever, if they're talking about him being out of shape, whatever it might be, then yeah, we'd probably need to start getting a little worried at that point. And then just another player from South Carolina was Nicholas Harbor, that, you know, people were pretty damn excited about last year with his giant size, his uber athleticism. And in fact, he actually just hit a 10.16 100 meter run. So like, that is insane at his size and weight and everything, but he's not even practicing right now because he's focused on track. And I mean, this dude really like wants to be in the Olympics and everything. It like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like he cares about football all that much. So I know a lot of people were excited about him last year. He was listed as a tight end. Now he's another one of those wide receivers that, like, you know, that was listed as a tight end, transferred in. The team's like, nope, he's a receiver. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, you're not, he's 245 pounds. Or no, I'm sorry, he slimmed down to 225 pounds, probably to gain speed for track. So is that even necessarily a good thing? I don't know. I mean, it's probably, if he wants to be a wide receiver, it'd probably be a good thing. But I don't know. I don't like the fact that he's focusing on track all that much.
I don't like it if you think of him as a tight end recruit. And I think at this point, he really just wants to play wide receiver, and his frame is going to allow for wide receiver more so. He's not going to develop that blocking and that type of mass and power to really contribute as a tight end. But I guess I wouldn't let the track involvement deter you too much, just because there have been some really positive reports even dropped this week saying how the coaching staff is really impressed with him. Like, every second that he's not on, like, practicing track or he's not in school, he's with the football team, throwing and catching with Lenora Sellers and those guys. He's working out, and I guess he's staying really linked in with the team, which is good. Those are things like what A-Chain did in at Texas A&M. Those are the types of things you want to see if a guy is truly splitting his time. But I mean, if he is going to continue being a wide receiver, I don't mind the idea of having like a guy with elite speed, like a DK Metcalf type of dude. I think there is that path there. Well, it's not guaranteed by any means. I do think there's potential. And I think he ran, what, a 10.1? I can't remember,
yeah,
what time.
10.18, yeah.
10.16, yeah. 10, yeah, it's like somewhere there is crazy. And then his 200 times are great too. So I just think that he's just such an intriguing guy. I wouldn't draft him like early in drafts, but from my experience, I mean, he's not going in startups. He's not going within the first, oh boy, like 8 rounds from my experience. I don't think.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's all about price. It's just like anything else. You know, if you can get him in a late round, or if you can trade for him cheap or whatever, that's a completely different story. I just remember in supplemental drafts last year, people were like losing their minds about him, drafting him towards the end of the first round, beginning of the second round in supplementals. And it's just like, man, like, this is a raw dude that isn't even 100% guaranteed to be playing football and all that kind of stuff, has talked about the Olympics, has talked about this and that. And it's just like, I don't want to draft that guy at the end of the first, you know, beginning of the second round. But if you're getting him late in a draft, or like I said, in a cheap trade, it's a completely different story. And obviously we love athleticism, we love that, but how often, and I know, I mean, you talked about DK, I know you're not truly comping him to DK or anything like that, but like, how often do those uber athletic guys, the raw uber athletic guys, truly hit? Not very often. So I don't want to, that's what I'm saying. Like, I just, if it, if it was going to be that uber athletic guy that is a little raw and that kind of thing, I want him to be 100% focused on football. And that's why I'm saying I'm concerned about him not being 100% focused on football. But that's probably more than anyone needs to talk about Nicholas Harbor. So we can go ahead and switch over here to Notre Dame. We have, unfortunately, some injuries. Actually, quite a few injuries, it seems like, with Riley Leonard is out. He had, unfortunately, ankle surgery. He actually was back at practice this week, but he's on like one of those little like carts that, that, you know, like you walk around with and everything. They said he actually took some snaps. He was handing the ball off and he actually made a couple of throws, but obviously he can't even put pressure on his ankle or anything like that. So it wasn't in a game situation or anything like that, but I guess it's good that he's still out there with the team and doing all that kind of stuff. Ankle surgery. I mean, I guess we're assuming that, that it's like a tightrope or something like that. Probably, maybe you have a little more insight into that, but usually those things are pretty quick recovery, so we wouldn't be overly concerned about it. I'm honestly not concerned about Riley Leonard as a Debbie prospect anyway. For Debbie purposes, I don't care. For C2C purposes, obviously a different story. We're hoping that Notre Dame can have, or like that he can have a similar year to like a Sam Hartman or something from last year, and actually put up some decent stats for your C2C squads. Did you find anything on that surgery?
No, I had looked into it and just not really a whole lot of details, other than they did mention tightrope in one place. Another place mentioned a toe injury as part of that. So I think those must be conflicting reports. I don't think it's both, but some sort of mild or just routine cleanup procedures is how I'm taking it, especially if he's back there throwing a little bit, but by no means expect him to be 100% this spring. It's going to be in the fall. Slower start for Riley Leonard. I was pretty, excited, I guess, to see him in just a new offense, a new setting, I guess. And I mean, that puts a little damper on things. So I'm not expecting big time upside out of Riley Leonard here, as this could affect his scrambling, which is a big part of his fantasy production and just his overall game as a quarterback. But as far as other wide receiver, let's hit the running backs, because I actually didn't really have any big time wide receiver news. But the one injury concern is that Kedron Young, unfortunately, who we've talked about before, both John and I, talented freshman coming in like 2 days into spring practice. He just picked up this hamstring injury. I have not heard if he's back yet at all, but it didn't sound like it would be like, oh, he's going to be out for the summer or anything like that. But just something that kind of sucks when he's trying to get reps versus another true freshman running back, Aeneas Williams, is actually really impressing. And I likened that to what we saw at Oregon last year with like Dante Dowdle and Jaden Lamar. And we both talked about them last season. And one of those guys ended up having to transfer in. The one that was more of the favorite actually coming in Dante Dowdle, he had to transfer out. And Jaden Lamar is still sitting there, to my knowledge. I guess I haven't heard any buzz about him. But Aeneas Williams maybe could be that guy for Notre Dame who's just not really being drafted or not being drafted highly in C2C supplemental drafts. And there's interest there. I mean, it doesn't seem like he's as good as Kedron Young by any means. Jadarian Price is still there. Jeremiah Love, I mean, he's working more at a wide receiver position in addition to the running back position. So it sounds like he's just going to be more of a receiving back now for them. I guess it's a little bit more wide open now with the Kedron Young injury. I know you still probably like him, I'm assuming, John, but does this put you off from him at all? What are your thoughts there?
No, I mean, obviously it depends on how long he's out and all that kind of stuff, but any freshman that's missing time in camp is never going to be a good thing. And there definitely is the possibility that Aeneas Williams, Aeneas, whatever it is, I'm guessing Aeneas, is there and getting reps, that that's never a good thing for Kedron Young. I do have Aeneas like pretty substantially lower than Kedron Young, but honestly, like the more research I've done on this stuff, like whereas with the wide receiver recruits, it really seems to, I mean, although it's not like a perfect hit rate or anything like that, but it really does seem like the higher end recruits tend to hit and the lower end recruits tend not to. With the running backs, it's really kind of hit or miss. And there doesn't really almost seem to be a rhyme or reason. And it's just like, hey, this 3-star hit. Hey, this 4-star hit. Oh, this 5-star hit, you know, but this 5-star missed and this 3-star hit and so on and so forth. So, I will say there's enough ambiguity to the situation to where I can definitely not tell you with certainty that Anais Williams will not take over that job or anything like that. So, you know, it's somebody to keep in mind, especially for supplementals and you know, deeper drafts, deeper leagues. Definitely somebody to keep in mind, because if he's impressing while Kedron's missing time, I've already expressed my concerns about Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price that, you know, I don't really feel overly confident about either one as actual Devy backs. And, you know, they're moving Jeremiah Love out to wide receiver, playing him in the slot role and everything. And, you know, you kind of said that you kind of liked that, you know, maybe seeing a little more, you know, a little more, you know, usefulness out of him and all that kind of stuff. Like the team can use him however they want, but we've already seen that team transition a running back to a wide receiver. You know, what if they decide that they want to do the same thing? Because they don't have that many proven wide receivers on the squad anyway. So if they decide, hey man, this guy's really good at catching the ball, they might just go ahead and do it. And they kind of, I mean, I don't want to say a proven track record because of one player, but I can't even remember the player's name.
Chris Tyree, right?
Tyree, thank you. Yeah. And, you know, but they already have the kind of track record of doing it recently. So, like, I wouldn't put it past them either. And especially if Anais Williams is impressing, then they go, hey, we have Jadarian Price, Kedron Young, and Anais Williams. We don't really need Jeremiah Love as a running back right now. So I wouldn't put it past them, but, you know, I'm definitely not banking on that either. I just also know that I don't really feel like Jeremiah Love's a great running back.
Yeah, and that's all fair. I think that is a blow to his chances of, I guess, being that workhorse back. I think the other notable news was just the weigh-ins and Jadarian Price. Off the top of my head, I don't remember, but I know that Jeremiah Love weighed in pretty light. Like, he didn't gain any weight. If anything, he lost a little bit.
They were both in like the low 190s, if I remember correctly, like 193, right. 194 or something like that.
Yeah. Price might have been slightly higher weight-wise, but it was not great. Versus Kedron Young, I mean, he's a beast. So he's got that going for him. So does Anais Williams, who is just a late-round guy you could take a flyer on in supplementals if you have the roster space, for sure.
Yeah, and I have Anais at 195. Do you have him higher than that?
I thought I saw a source saying he's more like 200, but yeah, I don't know.
Around there. I mean, honestly, like I don't knock somebody for being 195 in fresh breath, because I mean, we're assuming they're going to gain 10 to 15 pounds from there. So if he's 195, then we're assuming 210 by the time he's out of college, which is more than ideal for the NFL. So I'm not saying it as a knock. I just, what I have him listed as. But then obviously we have Kedron Young, who's 227. So, you know, it's a little different. So, I mean, if there is an outlier in the group as far as size, it's definitely Kedron Young. And we already saw that they utilized Audric Estime in that role last year or the past couple of years. And so maybe they're looking for the Estime. And that's why I've kind of been all over Kedron. But, you know, we need to see him back on the field. And obviously if he's missing time, that is not the greatest. But that actually brings us to probably one of the most exciting teams to talk about in all of college football, and that's going to be Texas. I honestly think it's going to be difficult, and we really have to pay attention throughout the spring, throughout the fall practices, who's on the field, who's running with the ones, because there's so many names to talk about right now. It's kind of crazy, but I think that everything that I've seen, I don't know, you know, about you, but I'm looking at your notes here, so I'm assuming that everything you've seen as well just says that Jonte Cook is probably going to be a stud. You know, he's just getting uber hyped. He's very, very good. He flashed, albeit in a small sample last year. You know, he showed big playability. He showed all that kind of stuff. And now they're talking about him being the one, him being the X, him being that, you know, outside player, you know, that we're going to want. Obviously we have, little concerns with Quinn Ewers and his deep ball and all that kind of stuff. But like, you know, if they can use Jonte correctly, I think it could be a pretty big year for him.
Yeah, I think that there's been positive things. I mean, he's consistently been with the starters, which is good. I've never really, I guess, wavered off of the opinion that he is just one of their best, one of the best guys in the entire class of wide receivers. So definitely take a big step forward, or I could see him taking a big step forward. But I want to also shout out like Isaiah Bond, basically just been coming in there looking really good. And then even Ryan Wingo, the true freshman, he has been consistently getting at least some praise for picking things up pretty quickly, getting involved. And it seems like he's in a good headspace and all those types of things. He's impressing the coaches with the attitude and whatnot. The one thing with him has always been, well, how is he going to be deployed? Because if he's just like this gadgety guy who, great, he's getting involved, but he's not actually like a wide receiver, like kind of how Luther Burden was used his freshman year. But then there's competition. There's Jonte Cook. There's Isaiah Bond. There's Matthew Golden. There's these other guys, Silas Bolden. Like you go down the list, like there are capable guys who could slot in ahead of a true freshman. I mean, I like that he's impressing in the spring. So you got to move him up a little bit just due to the consistent buzz and drumbeat there. But I mean, Ryan Wingo thus far has been not really used downfield in the spring based on the report that I saw. So he's still kind of learning how to play wide receiver. So Matthew Golden, he started off playing with the second team. I don't know if he's been able to rise up. DeAndre Moore has been getting some hype. I know there's some other guys there who have also been getting some playing time early on. I like to take those things with a grain of salt initially when it's like the first week of spring camp. They're going to give it to the guys who were there last year or have been there a few years. Like a lot of teams do this and they just want to give respect to those guys. Like at Washington, Jeremiah Hunter, he's not a first team wide receiver for Washington, but that's like the first week or first couple of days in practice. Like I could see him easily rising up to be a first team, you know, maybe their number one wide receiver on the entire team by the end of the season at Washington. But these teams, they like to defer to the guys who have been there, the holdovers, the carryovers from the previous years. So anyways, that's why a DeAndre Moore might be just shining out more than a Matthew Golden to this point, things like that in Texas. But at the end of the day, I am most interested in Jonte Cook and Isaiah Bond. After that, I don't know about some of those other guys outside of the freshmen.
Yeah, we've always been anti-Matthew Golden. Nothing against the guy personally, but we just never truly believed in him. And I mean, he really hasn't shown it. Like he hasn't shown us anything. And I think that he's more of a name now than anything else. Like it's just like people, for whatever reason, they really liked him as a recruit and they've just never given up on that. And now he's going to a great landing spot and they're like, oh man, and Matthew Golden's going to be the truth. And it's like, no, he's probably not. And you know, like you said, he up until now, we haven't even seen him run with the starters. So, you know, like maybe he will at some point, but yeah, it's looking more and more, not to toot our own horns, but it's looking more and more like we are right about Matthew Golden. Like he's going to have to do something pretty drastic at this point to really prove us wrong. I want to pump the brakes a little bit with Isaiah Bond, because while I've always been kind of lower than consensus on Bond, and it's worked out pretty well, you know, so far, but now like he's just getting uber hyped again because of the landing spot, because of Texas. And I mean, there's plenty of people that would say he's the one, like he's the one. If you know, like, forget Jonte, you want Bond. If you want anyone in that receiving core, you want Bond. But man, obviously I know it's not the ideal situation with Jalen Milroe in Alabama, but I'm looking at his numbers from last year and I'm like, where is the athleticism? Where is the yak ability? Because he had an ADOT of 12.9 yards. And he had 13.9 yards per reception. So it's like 1 yard of one yak after, you know, after each reception. Like it's not really showing like big play ability or anything like that. I'm not saying he doesn't have it. Obviously, I can't attest to what situation Jalen Milroe was putting him in after the catch and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, can we say that Quinn Ewers is going to be that much better to put him in that much better of a situation? I don't know. Ewers is a little bit better with thrower. I don't know if he's a substantially better thrower. So I just kind of want to pump the brakes a little bit. I'm not saying I'm out on Bond. I'm not saying don't have him on your team or whatever. I am saying if like somebody is just really excited about Bond, and there's plenty of people, I've heard him on podcasts, I've seen in articles, whatever. I've seen it on Twitter, Isaiah Bond's the truth, all that kind of stuff. If you find one of those people in your leagues, I am not opposed to trading Bond, trying to trade up, get a different player, better player, whatever. I'm really not opposed to that and taking advantage of that value right now.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I mean, well, I guess I'm there with you as in, like, I'm willing to move him for sure in trades. Like, if you can try to get a guy, like, I'm just trying to think, because it's so hard to trade up into that, like Jeremiah Smith or like Zachariah Branch or somebody like that, you know. But if you can get a nice package together for Isaiah Bond, I don't mind it. But at the end of the day, I mean, what he did, especially with that that situation with Jalen Milroe, like he surpassed what 2 yards per team pass attempt last year. He was up in the 20 plus receiving yards market share. Like, he was doing the minimum amount of things that you want to see for a second year guy in that type of situation. But like you said, he wasn't amazing. He was just good. But I still have him ranked solidly in my top 12 Devy wide receivers right now. So I don't think that there's a way I could move him out of that unless we see him struggle at Texas. I think he'll do enough. I mean, guys like Xavier Worthy have been dealing with Ewers for years and they ball out. So I think if you're a pretty talented player, you can still find some success this year at Texas. And it seems like those two top guys, Cook and Bond, seem pretty locked in my estimation.
Yeah, the other thing that concerns me about Bond is, you know, obviously we can talk about Milroe and his issues as a passer, but in 2022, he didn't have Jalen Milroe throwing the ball. He had Bryce Young. And while people might say, oh my God, Bryce Young's terrible, whatever, he was not a terrible college quarterback at the very least. I mean, he was a prolific college quarterback, and you know, he threw for, what, 4,000, 5,000 yards, whatever. And nothing really changed in year one for Isaiah Bond. He was a high-ish A-dot, low yards per reception player. I mean, it was a small sample, 17 receptions, but, like, you know, nothing, like, truly stands out as, like, oh my God, this guy's a playmaker. And just comparing Kobe Prentice and Isaiah Bond here, you know, I was talking about how, like, there's some things that, even though I'm not overly excited about Kobe Prentice, there's some things that stand out for him. And it's like the PPR points per touch, you know, it's like scoring points when you're actually getting the ball, like that kind of thing. And then we get to Isaiah Bond. He was at 2.86 PPR points per touch last year. Whereas, what did I say for Kobe Prentice? I just lost him, 3.41. So, I mean, like, that's a pretty substantial difference on the same team with the same quarterback throwing the ball. The yards per reception's higher. The ADOT's about the same, but the PPR points per touch is much higher. I actually have Kobe Prentice ahead of Isaiah Bond. And I'm sure that, you know, it's a huge shock and I mean, very, but I would rather have Kobe Prentice, especially at cost and at value and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, while it's kind of crazy to say straight up because value wise, they're just not the same. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, in a vacuum, I would rather have Prentice because he's showing that bigger playability.
Yeah, I do think that Bond can turn that around. I just did not trust kind of like the Joe Milton thing. Like he has a great arm. I mean, Jalen Milroe has a great arm. He just can't hit these guys deep. And so that makes them kind of rely on those underneath opportunities. And that's just not going to showcase what Isaiah Bond has as far as talent goes. So you can find those plays on his film where you say that is the high end athlete that we're looking for. It's just, like you said, it's not been consistently there. Part of it, you know, maybe on him, but I think he's certainly the athlete who can make that next step. He's no slouch there in the athleticism department. So I mean, I guess we probably disagree a little bit on that, but at the same time, Bryce Young was not the same his last year of college either. Like he went from almost 5,000 yards passing to barely surpassing 3,000 as a junior. And I mean, that I guess is a huge drop. So I'm not surprised that we didn't see you know, even more flashes out of Bond as a true freshman.
Yeah, that is fair. I mean, he definitely had a worse junior season, that team was kind of falling apart. But yeah, he also put up the almost 5,000 yards in 15 games in 2021. So compared to 12 games. So, you know, it's kind of like the Roma Dunze thing, you know, from this year. Like, people are like, oh, yeah, he 1,600 yards. It's like, yeah, in 15 games. Like, how many other players are we comparing him to that played 12? You know, like, three games is a pretty substantial difference. You're talking about 25% of a lot of these players' stats and, you know, just adding it on. Like, no big deal. They're the same guy, you know?
Yeah, right, right. But even, like, I think a lot of the success that he saw, he wasn't quite able to replicate that. Like you mentioned, they were a little bit more messy as an offense overall. Didn't really sync up. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, I don't even know if people focused on that enough, that like there was a substantial drop off in his junior season. And so, you know, who knows, but hopefully, I guess we're all hoping that Bryce Young will bounce back at least to being a decent quarterback at some point. But maybe the writing was on the wall that, you know, that he was never going to be that top end quarterback, based on that junior season. That brings us to LSU. And honestly, like, I don't have a lot to talk about here because I don't think there's a lot going on. I'm not excited about the quarterback situation. If I'm not excited about the quarterback, I can't really be overly excited about the wide receivers. I'm honestly not even you take that out and you take Garrett Nussmeier out and you put Jaden Daniels back there, I'm still not that excited about the wide receivers. I really don't like any of them. You have Shelton Sampson, a year 1-0. Then, you know, Chris Hilton, Aaron Anderson, who actually, I believe Aaron Anderson's running with the ones right now, if I remember correctly, which is kind of crazy. Aaron gave me a look, so maybe I'm wrong about that, but I thought I read that somewhere. And I believe that I have read and seen so much hype for Kyren Lacy on Twitter, you know, through podcasts and everything. And I just don't get it. I don't understand it. I'm not excited about any of them, really. The one player that I would care about is CJ Daniels, but even then, like, I'm not overly excited about Daniels. Like, he's my wide receiver 70 in Devy. Like, I'm not uber excited about him. And so, like, I don't know. I mean, he's a fifth year player transferring up. Like, yeah, we can be a little excited about him, but like, he's moving up. There's a lot of question marks, and then you add in the not great quarterback, and how can we truly be excited about that player?
Yeah. I mean, we don't have a large sample size to really say. We've already had the Garrett Nussmeier talk, so I guess we don't really have to get into that as far as, you know, do I expect him to be what Jaden Daniels was? No. And he's also has a big drop off in receiving talent. Like, that was part of Jaden Daniels' success, and he was also part of why those wide receivers had such success last year. It was a great match. So Nussmeier, things are going to come back down to earth, that's for sure. He could still be solid as far as a quarterback goes. Like, I mean, we see those guys take progressions year after year, and he's been in that system long enough, but the wide receiver weapons, I think you make a good point that we should not be overly excited. Like, I loved Shelton Sampson Jr., but it just sounds like the coaching staff is not in love with him. They're not in love with his physicality, apparently. He's not even running with the first team at all, at least thus far early in spring practice. So that's not a great start for a guy who had a great high school career, great prospect coming in. And then you go down the list and it's like, I don't know about Kyle Parker, you know, another year 1-0. Aaron Anderson, isn't he a two-time year 1-0? Like, both flopped at Alabama and LSU. Like, forget it. Chris Hilton, talk about a guy who's done relatively well, basically nothing besides some chunk big plays here or there. He is not ready to become an alpha. Now, he could certainly be a starter all year long, but like you're saying, maybe that's not going to be that lucrative. I agree with you on Kyren Lacy. The guy was not good at Louisiana. He was the fourth best wide receiver at Louisiana. Can you imagine? Like people are hyping him up as the LSU wide receiver one of the future, as if like he's some sort of great player. I get he was blocked the last 2 years by pretty good players ahead of him, but man, I just don't see it with Kyron Lacy. So I agree with you completely. And CJ Daniels, I think your ranking there is fair. I might even have him a smidge ahead of where you had him, but very similar area. And I guess I just really like what he did at Liberty. Like he was, if you're going to transfer up in competition, you're going to go to a wide open LSU wide receiver room. That's a good start. And you need to have been very productive early in your high school career. And CJ Daniels, he passes the mark of what you want to see from like a market share, yards per team pass attempt, et cetera, yards per reception. He was explosive. Like those types of things are all going CJ Daniels' way. It's just that he was injured in 2022. So that cost him a year. So now he's a fifth year guy. So obviously that's going to drop him in a lot of folks' eyes. I get that, but who has the most pedigree, or at least I won't call it pedigree, but who has the most proven nature, proven experience to their game in the LSU room? CJ Daniels by far. And they're going to start realizing that he's already been running with the first team and second team somewhat. And like I mentioned earlier, I don't put too much stock into transfers not getting with the first team immediately, unless you're like the alpha coming into a school. But I guess I'm not too concerned because he's mixing in with the starters already at LSU. So CJ Daniels, in my opinion, is the wide receiver you want there. That's just the little bit that we can glean thus far from the limited news out of LSU.
Yeah, I was saying how CJ Daniels is my wide receiver 70 in Debbie Beth. Chris Hilton Jr. is my wide receiver 174. And Kyron Lacy is my wide receiver 188. So that goes to show how I feel about the two. not the greatest. Like I said, I mean, I'm just not overly excited about that offense in general. I believe that we both, you know, like the running backs that are there. And so like, I can say that I'm excited about Caleb Jackson, but I mean, if they can't get the rest of the offense going, then maybe we should be a little concerned about Caleb Jackson too, because I don't know. It's looking more and more like it's just going to be one of those complete like rebuild kind of years for this team. Like they made it huge. They put up together one of the greatest offenses of all time last year. And then they lost a lot of key pieces. And I think people want it to be good this year, but I mean, if you actually look at it, like take a step back and look at it realistically, I don't think we can say this is going to be a good offense.
Yeah. Very fair points for sure.
All right. Well, I guess, I'm sorry. We got one more here. We got Tennessee. Unfortunately, or I guess, I mean, well, you never want anybody to be injured. So unfortunately, Cam Seldon is hurt. He is having shoulder surgery. Shoulder surgeries seem to be going around from what we've been talking about so far today. It's I talked about it last night on the Full Tilt Devi pod. Like, you know, you're a doctor of physical therapy, so obviously you can attest to it, but it seems like these shoulder injuries are the ones that can become reoccurring. You know, like they're more likely to become reoccurring because it's just something that takes a constant beating. And once you weaken that joint, it's just a lot more prone to popping out, you know, dislocating, tearing, whatever. And you're more likely to have these kind of injuries. So even though they're already saying that Cam Seldon's going to be back for the fall and he's going to be healthy and he's going to be all that kind of stuff, I would still be pretty concerned that he doesn't make it through the year without another injury, another reoccurrence at some point. Now we've seen players being able to play through it, put a brace on, do all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying he's going to even miss time or whatever, but we've also kind of seen players like not be as, as productive when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I was never overly excited about Cam Seldon as a prospect. I was never overly excited about Cam Seldon, last year and even going into this year. I'm always been the biggest Dylan Sampson fan. So nothing's really changed for me, but is it making you more excited about Dylan Sampson that they got, not only is Cam Seldon out, but now their true freshman Peyton Lewis is also out with the shoulder surgery. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I'm super bummed for Peyton Lewis. Cause I mean, I like him. And I know he showed up a little bit in your model, and I honestly was really high on him. I'm not going to lie, but this is knocking him down. I mean, when you get that opportunity to impress early and then you have to miss all that time. And then, like you said, how are they going to bounce back from these surgeries? How long is it going to take them to feel 100% again is a question. That's why you undergo these shoulder surgeries though, to hopefully prevent further shoulder instability and recurrences of shoulder dislocations and things like that. So hopefully you're not in that situation like Dalvin Cook was, where, you know, he kept having those dislocations and he really did well playing through that, but you don't want that with your running backs, right? You don't want them to have these continuous shoulder issues in their future, especially as such a young player. So these are good signs for Dylan Sampson, and obviously not the best signs for Cam Seldon and Peyton Lewis. So I would not necessarily, you're going to still want to roster those guys. It's just, you might hold back a little bit of your excitement compared to a Dylan Sampson, who has basically that backfield to himself. Like, there's Khalifa Keith, kind of a fun name that one is, but and then Deshaun Bishop. I guess I'm not really high on either of those guys. I mean, Keith seems like the thumper. Bishop seems like the Sampson handcuff, like a guy to kind of replicate a poor man's Dylan Sampson, let's say, to kind of replace him if they needed to. But I think Sampson, like you said, there's a lot of positive indicators in the past with his profile, a lot of things to be excited about. Now with the opportunity there, with two of the lead guys at Tennessee or co-lead guys, it was like a three-man backfield last year with Dylan Sampson and the other two guys, well, they're gone. So it's like that opportunity is just wide open for Dylan Sampson to have a good share. What does that look like at Tennessee? Well, that's another question, because I mean, we just don't know how they're going to A, rotate, and B, if they're just going to let Nico run it in all the time, or if they're even going to run the ball much. That type of system just loves to pass the ball, but it doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, Dylan Sampson is still going to make those touches count when he's on the field. And that's the important part, that we still see him be really explosive and efficient, and obviously a sleeper for this next year's upcoming NFL draft.
Yeah, if we kind of take Peyton Lewis out of the situation, and I like him as a prospect too, so I mean, I'm not trying to hate on him, but we already talked about how if you're a true freshman prospect and you are missing time, it's just never good. You know, it's never a good thing. And so if we kind of take Peyton Lewis out of the situation right now and we just look at last year's bowl game, which is probably the closest thing that we can say is to this year, like what this year should look like. Because you know, you had Jabari Small and you had Jalen Wright out of that game. Dylan Sampson against arguably the best defense in college against Iowa ran the ball 20 times for 133 yards, a 6.7 yards per carry clip. Pretty damn good. Now, he didn't score any touchdowns. Unfortunately, Nico I scored 3 rushing touchdowns. So kind of going to what you were saying, like, there might be some sniping going on there with Nico taking away some of the talent or some of the touchdowns. If you're like looking at it from a C2C aspect, like I need to score points, like that kind of thing, it might not be as beneficial. But if we're looking at it from a Devy perspective, Cam Seldon had 13 carries of his own in that same game while healthy. He had 55 rushing yards on that at a 4.2 clip. Khalifa Keith, which is a fun name to say, had 4 carries of his own for 10 yards at a 2.5 clip. So 3 of the names that you mentioned out of the 4 played in that game. And Dylan Sampson was by far the best, but got by far the most touches. What is holding Dylan Sampson back? And now those two players are injured, or I'm sorry, one of the players is injured. The freshman recruit that might have taken something away from him is injured. Like, what is holding Dylan Sampson back? Like, this actually makes me want to go buy even more of him, and I already have him everywhere.
And I just drafted Dylan Sampson in the 4th round of the supplemental, and I'm happy with that. I mean, that's to me a solid range for an SEC back who's set to break out if everything you're saying comes to light. And I guess what's holding him back question is just basically the size. Like, if the coaching staff just doesn't trust him to really give him a lot more carries than what he's had in the past, like let's say this past season. I guess that does limit his ultimate upside, but it's not like he's going to be the only small SEC back or just back in general to get high volume. Like, I mean, there's plenty of guys in college that can be high volume backs. It's just at the end of the day, is he going to be able to withstand the rigors of a really high volume season long, I guess, toll. So can he do it over a game? Absolutely. But Dylan Sampson has to prove that he is big enough, strong enough to handle that at the SEC level, which is no joke for sure. So I think he has the physical talent to do it. I really want to see him bulk up even further. I'm wondering what his max size will be, if it's going to be like 190 or if he gets up to 200 eventually. I'll be very intrigued with that.
I was trying to find it, but I can't. But I thought I read somewhere that he was up to 194. I could be wrong, but I thought I saw that somewhere. And I was like, better than nothing. So we'll take it. I'll take 194. I'm getting to the point where I can deal with players in the 190s, especially if you can get into the high 190s. You get into the lower 190s and obviously into the 180s, and I start to be pretty much out. But you know, things are changing. Times are changing. You know, we got Devin Achane in the league. You know, we got Jahmyr Gibbs just looking like an absolute stud out there.
Kyren Williams, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the league's different, man. That they want speed. They want burst. That's why I'm always talking about, I want this exciting guy. I want the big play. I want the big time run rate. I want the big time throw. I want all that kind of stuff. It's the big plays. That's what the NFL is looking for. They're not looking for a Najee Harris anymore, unfortunately. You know, they're not looking for that big bruiser that's right. Just going to run over and bowl over these guys. They're looking for somebody that's just going to, you know, be electric and just, juke you out of your shoes. And I believe that Dylan Sampson can be that guy.
Jahiem White season, question mark.
Yeah. You know what? I believe we were talking about, I don't know, a couple players last week, and I was saying I might be the highest on this player. I think I'm actually the highest person on Jahiem White. Like, I'm probably a little too high on Jahiem White for his size. But once again, I discount height. If you're too short, if you're too small, I do all those discounts in the model, and yet he's still showing out. And so, you know, we just have to see what he does this year and, see if he can continue on. But I mean, he had an electric, exciting freshman season. So I'm very interested to see what Jahiem White can do. And, you know, it's not exactly the same player, and Dylan Sampson's a little bit bigger, but, it's just that exciting player that I want to root for rather than the, I mean, Cam Seldon was supposed to be like an athletic guy and all that kind of stuff, but like, it just seems like he's kind of that big plotter more than anything, really.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, Jahiem White, you also just got to mention him. We'll mix in the theme for the show, like the spring news. Like, CJ Donaldson broke his ankle at the end of 2023. He's still limited in the spring. Insert Jahiem White breakout season. There you go.
I like it. I do like it. I honestly didn't even realize that CJ Donaldson had broken his ankle until you put that into the news.
Yeah, and it was at the end of the season. So, I mean, that doesn't really excuse the fact that he just wasn't very good last year. And you know, I don't think that, despite what he did as a freshman, I guess I wasn't surprised. Like, I don't believe in him. I think Jahiem White, honestly, is the more explosive back, the guy that we should be paying attention to at West Virginia. Though I will say, if Donaldson comes back to full health by the fall, I think that cuts in a little bit to maybe the goal line work and or just like some of those early down carries. But again, if you're really explosive, you're going to have those blow up games, especially when, let's say, Donaldson gets banged up again. Well, there you go. Jahiem White's going to pop off for games. So in Devy leagues, I mean, you got to, depending on your depth, you got to really consider, like, is Jahiem White worth rostering? But in C2C, he can be a really fun player.
All right, and then one last thing before we get out of here. Can we just stop with Malik Benson, please? Like, I don't know if you're willing to forgive, because you were pretty high on him last year. You were all about him. You were talking about, I don't think you actually did it, but you were talking about possibly drafting him in, like, the first round of supplementals and stuff like that, maybe the, or early on, maybe not the first round, but, you know, pretty early on. And like I said, I don't think you actually did, but at some point you would like discuss possibly doing that in the earlier rounds. And he did nothing. I mean, he did absolutely nothing as a, you know, as a junior, like obviously jumping up from, you know, skyrocketing from JUCO, you know, talent and everything. So I'm not saying he can't take a step forward, but it's not like DJU is like raising anyone's value or anything like that. Like if anything, we think that DJU can be a decent quarterback, you know, like get him the ball, but I don't know that Malik Benson's good enough to where we can say, oh, if we can just get him the ball at this point. So like for Devy purposes, especially, can we just please stop?
Yeah. I mean, for all intents and purposes, yeah, as a prospect, not great. And you can't bank on him having high CFF upside either. Like it could happen. Absolutely. But it could happen for so many other guys out there who have more interesting profiles at this point. So definitely agree that that's one that didn't work out. I think he was, you know, early rounds last year. Yes. But I think the third round was kind of where it's like, okay, you got to start drafting that guy if he falls. But yeah, first round, oof, that's got to hurt for people who are investing that early of draft capital.
Yeah.
Like Benson.
Yeah, and I don't want to put words in your mouth because I don't think you were ever doing drafting him in the first round, but there were people that were. And so there were absolutely people. I mean, people were overly hyped about this guy. And I've just always been kind of against that. Cam Ward moving up from FCS, you know, a couple of years ago. It's the same thing. People were like, oh my God, he's a stud. He's a stud. It's like, no, guys, like he's coming from FCS. Malik Benson's coming from JUCO. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm not saying it hasn't happened in the past. But what are the odds of him coming in and just being a true stud with other five-star prospects and stuff around him? Not very great. And the reason why we're talking about Malik Benson right now is because there's reports that in spring practices he's looking good for FSU. But it's kind of one of those, it's kind of like a barren wasteland, like LSU, you know, of course he's going to look good. Who the hell else is there? You know, so I'm not falling for it. I don't care. And if anyone is, and you unfortunately were someone that drafted him early on last year, take advantage of it and sell him now. Just please do it.
Wise words there.
All right, so that's all we got for you now. Like I said, it's a little weird. You have some teams just starting. You have some teams about to end. We obviously will have more news for you in the future. We don't even normally do news, but I just felt like it was a pretty important time of year to at least talk about some of these players. There's obviously a lot going on with you know, some of these teams, and we can't even say like who are the guaranteed starters. And so we're trying to figure all that out. As we're trying to figure it out, we're trying to get you guys the news and you know, convey it to you as well. We'll probably do the same thing in the fall as we get new news and you know, just continue on with that. But obviously we will be back in your ears as soon as possible talking something about Devy or C2C. But you know, Aaron, do you have any words of wisdom before we get out of here?
No, other than just pay attention to these news tidbits coming out, because for example, I've been taking part in this supplemental draft over the last week, and that has influenced a couple of the picks that I've made, like either in a positive or negative way. Like I've held off on guys where it's like they're not getting hype or there's injuries or otherwise, or at least pushed them down my board slightly, and vice versa. If there is something that's really notable in the spring, maybe that elevates a guy like a Dylan Sampson or some of the other guys we talked about today. So certainly you still want to be somewhat reactive to this stuff, just not overreactive at the end of the day.
Yeah, and sell Matthew Golden, I think, is the most important takeaway from this podcast. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I guess I don't know if that is the number one takeaway, but I think that is a takeaway. And if that's your only takeaway from the podcast, rewind, listen a little bit more. I think we have some good kind of arguments to buy or sell a bunch of these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And draft Varquez Gumbs at the end of your supplemental. Those are the two takeaways. Now, I'm just kidding. Hopefully you have more than that. Definitely actually, do that.
Actually, no, this is not even a news tidbit. Late in your Devy drafts, you can still get some really interesting tight ends. So for example, like I was kind of surprised I could get him this late, but I'm not gonna stick my nose up at it. Tyler Warren, he went in the sixth round of the supplemental draft that I was in. And I think at that point, a guy who is attached at Penn State and who has, well, obviously they're going to make him be a great tester. Like, they just develop such great athletes. Plus, he's already been productive. Like, I think that there's something there. I'm not saying he's like an all-star, but you'll see more and more analysts now sliding him into the top 10 ranks at the tight end position, even the top five I've seen. And I guess in supplementals, that's, I guess, a very fair value. If you can get him anywhere around the fifth, sixth, seventh, yeah, go for it.
I normally don't love tight end talk, but I'll tell you what, I'm giving you that one. I really like that call, because not to say that Theo Johnson's getting like overly pimped out during this this offseason, but I mean, his name has been thrown around quite a bit. Like, he did really well at the Senior Bowl. He got on a lot of people's radars there. One of those things where I was at the Senior Bowl, if you remember correctly, and it was just always like, it was Theo Johnson. Oh, who caught that? It was Theo Johnson. Like, he was all over the place. And I'm not even saying that I'm that overly excited about Theo Johnson. I think he's my tight end four in the class, and not the greatest tight end class. Like, I'm not, I probably won't even end up with any, or maybe like in the fifth round or something like that at this point. But he obviously went out and crushed the combine like all Penn State players do. And we would expect Tyler Warren to do the same, but Tyler Warren outproduced Theo Johnson, you know, as a year younger player. So I really do like that call. And if you can get those kind of players, I mean, obviously we're not really telling you to go out and get a tight end. Fourth year or fifth year? I think he's a fourth year player. No, he's a fifth year player. I'm not telling you to go get a fifth year player on your Devy squads, but for C2C purposes, yeah, that might be a pretty good idea.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess if you're going to take a fifth year guy, it's probably going to be like a tight end, right? You don't really want those running backs who have been around forever. You don't really want the wide receivers who have been around, you know, more than 4 years, ideally. There's some exceptions, of course. But, you know, sometimes at quarterback, but more often at tight end, it just takes time for these guys to really develop and pick their shots of when they want to enter the NFL draft. So I guess maybe that's my word of wisdom.
I like it. I generally don't like tight end words of wisdom, but we will accept it this one time only. Once again, we appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back as soon as possible. Until then, we are cashing out. See you guys.